Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Folks, we're talking about Baltimore City Schools. Jesse Schneiderman, who's a teacher at Frederick Douglass, put out this tweet this weekend with a graph, and he noted that Baltimore City Public Schools, they're spending $6,872,000.83 on school police, according to the 2018 budget statement. He offered the question up that we've been discussing, what else could we do with that money? I asked Kim Trueheart to join me. She's an activist here in Baltimore City. And we had a phone call from Mr. B, who is a Baltimore City police officer. Now, we're going to finish up our conversation with them. And later on in this hour, we're going to switch and we're going to talk about Kavanaugh. We're going to talk about white women. And we're going to talk about what's happening now with performative wokeness. I want to tell you that we have one more ticket for this lynching discussion that's happening on Saturday at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum. It's the biggest lynching discussion. We're going to have all kind of panel discussions. I am moderating, and I have one ticket for someone to come and be my guest. In the first hour, I asked you the question, who was the first black man to get his PhD from the Department of History at Harvard University? Carter G. Washington was number two. Number one was Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois, of course. Well, my question now, if you want that last ticket, who is the first black woman to chair the Department of History at Harvard University? The same department where W.B. Du Bois got his PhD, where Carter G. Woodson got his PhD. What's the name of the first black woman to hold that seat, the most powerful position in the department? A black woman. Call me with that answer, 410-319-8888. First right answer, the ticket is yours. Kim and Mr. B., are you still with us?
Yes,
ma'am.
Okay, so Mr. B., we were going to break. I had asked a question because I was trying to understand what you said when you said the Baltimore City police officers help the school officers out in a lot of ways. Because there are some concerns that people have about having the Baltimore City police officers coming into the schools and working in that kind of close and kind of vulnerable position that our students are in when they seem to have a different relationship with them out on the streets.
I wasn't quite sure what your question was in the end.
Well, you had said that the Baltimore City police officers help the school police in a number of ways. I'm just trying to figure out what those ways are, given from the outside, we see some of the interactions that some of your fellow officers have with our young people here in this city. So what's happening differently in the schools where you're being more of a support system?
Well, first, I just want to say the Baltimore City School Police, they're very professional. I've had a lot of good professional relationships with them. I said from a support element, as far as I don't know what the number is for how many officers that they have, but they have large venues, like large crowds, and they need additional assistance as far as traffic control, maybe crowd control. But it's not just that, through investigative areas as well. We help each other, brothers in the profession. But basically my comment was, as far as the Baltimore City Police Department, like we're some kind of pariah, because there's a lot of good officers still out there in the street that, mm-hmm. that care for the citizens of Baltimore and the kids and, it's a very small percent of bad apples out there, and basically that was my point.
Mr. B., thank you so much for calling. And, sir, I just want to make a note. Thank you so much for your service to the city. We definitely do appreciate you. So, Kim, let me ask you about that. Do you think having Baltimore City police officers coming in and working in a more intimate environment with our school-age children will bring us to a better place? I mean, I'm not sure if we need to bring the police officers from the streets into the school. We have school police officers who, according to Clyde Boatwright, are trained differently.
Yes, they are trained differently. They get the fundamental police training, just like our city police do. But on top of that, the school system enhances their professional development with supplemental training that does help them relate better to the children. That's not something that's part of the professional development for the city police. Um, I I don't want anybody to believe that I think it's a panacea to have the school police in the buildings.
Right.
They do a good job. They do. And their presence in the building affords them time and opportunity to work closer with our children. They are not a substitute for counselors.
Right.
And by no means do I think that. You know, a trained professional counselor is what some of these children who are experiencing chronic issues in their home life, they bring it into the school building. And we have to be able to address that. Ideally, we want more counselors. We want more social workers. We want more psychologists. But we don't have that money right now. We don't have that luxury. We've got to go fight for that money. Just like we had to fight for the $1 billion to fix and renovate 25 schools that we're doing now.
Right.
We got to go fight for more funding.
Which, as you want to know, because you said this earlier, that on November 6th, when people go out and vote, they need to vote yes on the Lockbox initiative so that the money's coming in from these casinos. Let's not forget that in Maryland, six state casinos brought in $143.8 million in September alone. That the money that we have for the Education Trust Fund will be money that is put aside and it can't be used for anything else, right? So vote yes on that. And on November 7th, we don't have to have this conversation because we know money is going to soon come.
Yeah.
All right, we have, I think it's Raube, who's a new caller from Northwest Baltimore. Raube, welcome to the family. And help me make sure I'm pronouncing your name correctly, sir.
Okay, it's pronounced Raube.
Raube, okay.
Yes. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm calling to answer the question about the first black woman to chair the Department of History at Harvard University.
Yes. I believe it's her name, Verlita Higginbotham. Something like that.
It's something like that, but you got to be able to have her name. Say it again. I don't think
The last name is Higginbotham.
The last name is Higginbotham. If you can give me one of her other names, I am going to release this ticket to you.
Oh, man. It's not Verlita.
It's not Verlita. But let me go ahead and tell you. Her name is Evelyn Brooks Higginbotham. You are absolutely correct.
Okay.
Evelyn Brooks Higginbotham, who is currently, this is what's so great about it, she is at this moment the head, the president of ASALA, which is Carter G. Woodson's organization, and she's now chairing the Department of History where Carter G. Woodson got his PhD. Not only is she the first black woman to chair this, she also received one of the highest medals from Obama in her field of the humanities. She's a historian, and she's the one that first coined the term respectability politics. So hold on 1 second, Raube, and you will be my guest on Saturday, and Justina will get your information.
All right,
Kim, we have a couple more calls, and then we're going to adjust our topic, but we want to have Tavon. Tavon's from West Baltimore. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. I had a question. As far as, like, because there is a shortage of counselors, what about people that like myself, personally, I would like to volunteer to, you know, talk to children and stuff like that. What do I need, any special certifications or anything? Because I have common sense and I can deal with people. I know people. I can relate to people. And I have worked with teenagers as well because I volunteered, coached at my high school in lacrosse and other sports. So what about people that's willing to volunteer? I'm not able to have a full-time schedule, but I can do some. A half a loaf of bread is better than none.
So what do you think, Kim?
So
what should he do then? Here's somebody who wants to get involved. Of course, he can't work full-time there. But so what do we do with people who are like, you know, I want to lean in here?
I think you need to go to the school in your community that you want to serve, talk to the principal. They have volunteer opportunities at every school in the city. And you go and you talk to him. He will then process you for a background check. They do a criminal background check on every individual that works with our children, whether you're getting paid or not. And once that background check is completed, they send it to the principal, giving him the okay to let you work with the kids. And by all means, please step up, volunteer. We can always use more help. You know, I run some programs at the Liberty Rec Center, which is attached to the elementary school there. And we're always looking for volunteers to help.
And Tavon, if that happens for you, give us a call back. We'd like to know how that turns out for you.
All right, I certainly will. I'm going to get on top of it.
Thank you so much. We have Ernest on the phone. Ernest is a former Baltimore City police officer. Ernest, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I was looking on the internet for Miss Kim Kuhart to see what her bio and bona fides are.
Mm-hmm.
Now, because in order to be a teacher, you have to have certification.
Right.
Is that right?
Yes.
You have to be certified.
Yes.
And if you're going to be a counselor, you have to be certified.
Absolutely.
And you take that certification test, you know, you take it at?
Yeah, I know. Well, let me just make a note that I'm certified to teach in Baltimore City. I'm certified K-12 in language arts, and I'm certified to teach middle school in social studies. So I know what you're talking about. You have to be certified.
Yep, yep.
Classes, you got to keep sharpening the saw. Like, I got all that. Yes, certification
okay, but,
in Baltimore City.
But now, it's a difference from being certified and a contract worker.
Right.
Now, is Ms. Kim Kuhart certified or is she a contract worker?
Actually, she's on the phone and she can answer those questions. So, Kim, go ahead, please.
I'm neither. I'm a retired Navy program manager, certified and DOD certified program manager, but that has nothing to do with my volunteerism. And everything that I do these days is volunteering to help our children. So I'm not in a classroom. And I don't profess to be a teacher or an educator. That's not my forte. Program management is my forte.
Well, what you do profess to be an expert on what you're talking about.
No,
now,
I'm
in Baltimore.
I'm
an expert. Let me continue. In reference to police being in school, I used to work as a resource officer after I retired from the Baltimore Police Department. And I worked along with the school police. And they did an excellent job. We worked together. Now, the thing is that the school police, if I'm not mistaken, go to the Baltimore City Police Academy. That's where they're trained at. Now, they had in a lot of cases in Baltimore County, Harford County, their police officers are the ones that's in the school. They don't have no special jurisdiction. It would be easy to bring the school police into the Baltimore City Police Department and to work out of there. Baltimore County, the regular Baltimore County police are the ones that's in Baltimore County schools. They have the car park there.
Okay.
They have everything there. So, and this is what they did with Baltimore City Police a long time ago. They used to have park police. They brought the park police into the Baltimore City Police, trained them. They didn't need that much training because they were already police. And then they put them in with us. So the fact that the Baltimore City Police Department needs to be fixed, it's not the police department that needs to be fixed. It's the city council and the mayor who put these people, like Kevin Davis, as police commissioner. He was charged with kidnapping a young man.
Let me ask you this, Ernest, because I know, you know, Kim was specifically speaking. And, Kim, I'm not speaking for you. I'm just trying to clarify the point here. But we were talking about Baltimore City School Police, and we were drilling down deep into that. So you're saying that the Baltimore City Police Department, it's not the police department that is what she called having some real issues. You're saying it's the people that the city's putting in charge of the police, like Kevin Davis. You're saying it's not the police officers, because she's saying that the police department isn't working here.
It's not working because if you take a guy that was a jump-out person when he was a patrolman and got sued for $90,000 before he got the job at the Baltimore City Police and had a terrible record in the counties that he served in, if you put this person as the police commissioner, and he approved of this gun trace task force, what are you going to get?
All right. Thank you so much, Ernest. I appreciate you. So, Kim, I just want to thank you so much for your time today, for just jumping on and kind of talking us through this. And I want to thank Jesse Schneiderman for even putting out the tweet to start this discussion. It is a long discussion. We'd like to have you back on as we get closer to November 6th, because I think we need to keep talking about this lockbox initiative.
Yes, we do. Thanks, Dr. K.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you as well. So, folks, we're going to adjust the topic because we've got to talk about Kavanaugh. We've got to talk about what has been happening. And the question that folks are wondering, are some of our white women, these activists, the ones who are doing performative wokeness, I mean, have they lost their mind? Because we do have Bette Midler saying that women are the N-word of the world. We do have Molly Ringwald, the actress Molly Ringwald, calling on Beyonce and others to kneel for rape culture, a specific act that has been done in response to police brutality. I mean, there's am I the only one who stands with Cap? Because I can't be. We're trying to get to the heart of this. I want to begin our conversation because I do have Dr. Amrita Myers on with me. I want to just play this one clip, the impeaching Kavanaugh clip, and then we're going to get into what do we do now that we have another accused sexual predator sitting on the United States Supreme Court. Let's take a listen to this clip.
Example of Samuel Chase, there were 8 counts of impeachment, and he was accused of being too partisan in his decision-making. The Senate cleared him, but the result of that was to say for all of the next 2 centuries, he was the only justice ever impeached, that justices of the Supreme Court can't be partisan, but even more to the point, they have to be independent of the president who appointed them.
Yeah,
and the real problem with Kavanaugh is exactly that.
And that's where I was going to go with you, because I was taken aback by the sort of rancor, the anger of Brett Kavanaugh, the yelling, the challenging senators.
It was almost psychiatric. It was a primal scream.
It was really unreal to watch, but I was even more taken aback, I have to say, Michael, by the partisanship, the Clinton conspiracy theories, aligning
revenge
himself with
Trump. Revenge on behalf of the Clintons.
Yeah. Have we ever had a Supreme Court nominee go that partisan in their hearings?
No. The first one to testify at his own hearing was Felix Frankfurter, 1939. You never heard anything like that. Clarence Thomas was supposed to be angry, and he was. Didn't come near to what Kavanaugh said yesterday. He was partisan. And the other danger is he reflected when he was saying maybe this is revenge for the 2016 election. There's a real danger if Kavanaugh goes to the court. He goes to the court as Donald Trump's poop.
That's Joy Reid from MSNBC, who's kind of having this conversation, getting into what the next steps are with Brett Kavanaugh. I mean, if he is indeed, if he goes up and he has to be held responsible from a legal perspective and a criminal perspective on what he is accused of doing to Dr. Ford, can you actually impeach him? I think there's only been one Supreme Court justice who's ever been impeached. I mean, think about how long Clarence Thomas has been there. But we want to talk about what is happening now in terms of this movement, and what do we do, and how do we make sense of it? I have Dr. Amrita Myers on the phone with me. Dr. Myers, how are you?
I'm well, Dr. K. How are you?
I'm fine. So can you talk to us about what's happening in this moment? Because we see that this major response, which I agree with, by the way, to Brett Kavanaugh. I am someone who does stand with Dr. Ford. I believe her.
I do too.
He was able to use his power, leverage what I argue as his white male privilege, in a room with men who are leveraging their white male privilege, along with a white woman who's leveraging her privilege. And they pushed him through, even though, when you look at the testimony, is this the character of a person who should be making decisions that will potentially impact our nation for the next 100 years?
Right. And I mean, I would say not only white male privilege, but heterosexual, wealthy white male privilege. I mean, we have to layer class and sexuality onto this as well. And I think that this is really dangerous, right? Because of his age, he has the ability to influence the courts for roughly the next 2 generations.
Wow.
40 years, easily. And what message does this send, not only young women, but young men across the country? And it's not just about Roe v. Wade,
which is what everybody's been talking about.
Right.
It goes beyond Roe v. Wade, although certainly that's something that is definitely concerning to a lot of people, including myself. But we're talking about, like you said, putting another sexual predator on the high court. But the way that he carried himself, the way that he screamed at senators during the questioning, the partisanship that he displayed, the rancor, the anger, he did not conduct himself in the manner of a judge, of a Supreme Court justice. Mm. He did not conduct himself in the manner of someone that I want in any position of authority, in any position of power. And so when you put the way that he behaved towards women, especially the women who were conducting the questioning,
right?
You know, these are the behavior patterns of a man who has not only real problems with people who are in positions of authority ahead of him, but women who are in positions of authority over him. He behaved in classic patterns of behavior of men who are domestic batterers.
Well, let me ask you this, Dr. Myers, because what concerns me here is that his behavior given his testimonial, right? We understand he was testifying, but it really was his testimonial that moved from him crying to him yelling to him cutting people off to him admitting that he passed out, but he doesn't really call it passing out. He calls it sleep. We ran the gamut of emotions from this one man during this one period of time. What concerns me is that his behavior, though it's not the typical behavior of someone who we expect to be the Supreme Court justice with all the respect that's afforded to them, but isn't his behavior kind of the way it is in this new Donald Trump era? Like, he reminded me of Trump, yelling, screaming, throwing his privilege all over the place, and expecting people to give way because of it.
He behaved like a bully.
Yeah.
And everybody, I mean, he behaved like a bully, and in a room full of heterosexual white men who backed his play.
Yeah, because these are the same heterosexual white men who back Donald Trump's play. And this is also a man who behaves like a bully.
Right. And I mean, that's why I said I'm troubled by the implications of the message that this sends not only women but men, that we've entered an era where not only is it okay to behave like a bully, but behaving like a bully is rewarded.
All right, we're going to hold you here for just 1 second, Dr. Myers. We're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, Onaje, Valerie, Judy, Donna, stay with us. We're going to get to your questions. We're talking about Kavanaugh, and it seems like some of our white sisters have potentially lost their mind as a result of what they're doing at this time in history. We're going to talk about that when we come back. This is Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. Stay with us. Welcome back to Today with Dr. K. I'm Dr. K. Wise Whitehead. I'm on with Dr. Amrita Myers. We're talking about Brett Kavanaugh, who's now a Supreme Court justice, and he is an accused sexual predator. There is a concern about white women at this moment, many of whom, who spoke up at least, were standing with him. There were a large number, of course, protesting against him. We're talking about when it came down to the vote, to watch a white woman just say that she does believe something happened to Dr. Ford, just doesn't believe that Brett Kavanaugh did it. It just reminded me, Dr. Myers, of the 54% of white women who voted for Donald Trump and put him into this office.
Yes. As I listened to Susan Collins defend her
vote. I didn't want to say her name. Ah, go ahead. Oh, it just hurts me. But go ahead.
It was one of the in an era of very bad things, it was probably one of the most stomach-wrenching things I've had to listen to.
Think about that.
I know that voters in Maine have been working very hard, even before her speech and vote, to raise money to make sure that she doesn't win her seat again in November. But, I mean, her colleague in Alaska is going to find herself in a similar position, I think.
And I think people have to be held accountable right now. I think that
I think everyone needs to be held accountable. I think that Senator Flake, for all of his, posturing of let's extend this by a week and have an FBI investigation, he himself then voted right along with the rest of his colleagues.
Lockstep.
Party over morality. This party has consistently said that they are the party of family values, and they have proven themselves to be anything but.
This is a party that has supported this man.
They have proven themselves to be party uber allist. And if anything else simply doesn't matter. Family values don't matter. Morality doesn't matter. People's integrity doesn't matter. Dr. Ford passed a polygraph. That seemed to not matter.
No.
She was willing to go to, in front of millions of people on camera. She was willing to an FBI investigation. She was willing to have outside witnesses come forward. Her opponent was not willing to do any of those things. No polygraph, no outside witnesses, no FBI investigation. At every turn, he was unwilling to do any of those things. And yet, she is the one who has been smeared and left bleeding on the floor. And the GOP has once again closed ranks, party uber allist. They don't care about morality or family values or anything else.
I knew where you were going, though, and I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm with you. Let's get some callers in here. We have Onaje, who's driving on 695. Thank you so much for calling us. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, Dr. Kay, and I think it was Dr. Myers. Dr. Myers, how are you guys doing this afternoon?
We're doing well. Don't gender us, though, but we're doing quite well. You can say, how you folks doing? But we're doing very well.
We're well, thank you, yes.
Yes, well, sometimes I always think of the white feminist as the white tiger. Mm-hmm. You always go to the zoo to find and see the white tiger, but the white tiger never shows out for the people to see.
Mm-hmm.
And with these feminists that, to me, like Dr. K said, these are the same women that voted for Trump. These are the same women that raised these young white men to have this privilege. They're their brothers, they're their sisters. And
yes, they are.
They're the sisters of these men. And I don't know why do we expect so much more from them.
Thank you so much, Onaje. What's interesting, Dr. Myers, just to follow up on Anaje's point, I mean, we know when we look at history, because history, we can take a look at what's going on to understand what's happening now. We look back. We know that white women have historically been pawns in a system of patriarchy and misogyny. I mean, let's not forget that on the enslaved plantations, there were white women, the wives of the plantation owner, who were participating and who were complicit.
Correct.
And what was happening in terms of the high number of rapes that took place across these plantations, and then holding the woman, the enslaved woman, responsible for the fact that her husband raped this woman, holding the woman responsible for it. So we've seen this before.
She couldn't attack her husband for the violence he was, perpetuating, and then so instead she took her anger out on the helpless enslaved women who were the victims in this whole crime. She took her violence out against those biracial children that were being born, and she took her anger out on those helpless children. She couldn't fight back against those men, and so she took it out on the women and kids. We've seen, we have the oral testimonies. We have the, those ex-slave interviews that were conducted.
Yes.
And we saw the torture that she meted out against those women and those children, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we have wonderful books that were written by people like Savolia Glimpf, who teach in North Carolina. We see the results of that.
And I want to be clear, before people start calling, I am not saying all white women. I'm not saying that.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Yeah. And, but
absolutely
I have to be clear with my listeners, because they'll say, well, she's saying she's coming down on all. No, we want to be clear
here. I have incredible white sister allies that I am thankful for every single day.
Who lean in and do it all the time. We have Judy on the phone from Northwest Baltimore. Judy, how are you?
Hi, Dr. K. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Thank you for calling.
And your guest. This is what I want to say. If you all remember, when Sarah Sanders Huckabee came out and spoke to the reporters, what color dress did she have on one day? It was out of the norm. It was red. Mm-hmm. It was a red dress. Michael Pence, who wears red neckties.
Mm-hmm.
Judge Kavanaugh came on that speech. What color tie did he have?
So red again?
There you go. Thank you. Y'all have a good day.
Okay. So I actually don't know what that means, Dr. Myers. Do you know the red dress, the color red? Is that something synonymous with, I don't know, hostility, rape, sexual assault? I'm not sure what the red means.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I have no
idea.
Either.
I certainly know that red is the color of the GOP.
Right, so maybe that's what it is. But that's, we all know that they're part of the GOP. Like, we get that. So I'm not sure what that reference is. But please feel free to enlighten us when you call back. We have Donna on the phone from Baltimore. Donna, how are you? Donna, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Yes. Well, I mean, look what happened in the Catholic churches are still going on. When the children who are now adults started talking about sexual assault, you know, the Catholic Church dismissed it. Other people said, oh, how could that happen? We are years later, and we're still having this issue.
Right.
And I'm glad that Pennsylvania did what they did. They did an informal investigation, and they found all the victims corroborative, and now they're going to try. They're working towards prosecution. My question is, and I have two, my question is, can Dr. Ford still pursue an investigation in the county that it happened with the law enforcement so they can do, just like with Pennsylvania, they actually do the actual investigation
right.
and come up with evidence so that if there's opportunity to impeach him, that would
right.
be that was something. And my other question is, and I heard this on NPR News about our Supreme Court was founded through English law and
right.
old English, whatever. And all the Supreme Court around the world have now have term limits of 70 years old.
Right.
And the United States is the only country that's still using this old ways. And the question is, how can we get that changed? Because these Supreme Court justices should not be on there for life. They need to be cut off. We need to be consistent with all other Supreme Court justices in other countries that have changed that law and moved it towards just up to 7 years, a cutoff, so that we can get new blood in there. And I wanted y'all's opinions, and I'll hang up and thank you.
Okay, thank you so much, Donna. Answer the first question about Dr. Ford, because here in Maryland, because we talked about this on the show, that there is no statute of limitations. Dr. Ford has not called for a criminal investigation, filed a report. She actually could. So that's one of the things we were looking at here in Maryland, which is where the incident happened in the county here in Maryland. She could pursue criminal charges if she so chooses to do that. I wonder, Dr. Myers, whether or not she's going to put herself back on the line. She's dealing with death threats. She's been doxxed. Her kids can't go to school anymore because they're being harassed. They've had to pay for protection. Her neighbors have raised money. Why put yourself back out there again? Because the moment you did, you see what has happened as a result of that. This is why a lot of victims don't come forward.
God bless that poor woman and her family. My heart just breaks for her. I mean, in most states, the statute of limitations would have expired.
Right.
You know, it's very rare that in Maryland, in that county, it hasn't, because in most places it would have. And there's two separate issues here, too, because the woman is talking about impeachment. If it were to come out that he lied under oath, that's another separate issue altogether.
Right.
Because to start impeachment proceedings, right? That's a separate issue versus whether or not she wants to pursue criminal proceedings.
Oh, I can't even see that happen. And as for the term limits, I mean, a number of us have been talking about that.
We've been discussing that a lot.
Trying to get to term limits.
That because I think she's right. I think that, you know, presidents have term limits.
Senators, everybody.
I think senators need term limits, quite frankly, because I'm a little tired of people like Mitch McConnell who have been around for way.
Well, you know what?
Long.
But wait a minute. But with Mitch McConnell, even though I'm with you, I blame the people who keep voting for him. They could actually vote him out.
Yeah.
I'm just like, come on, people. We're giving them term limits. We're doing that. We're saying, you know,
yeah.
we're going to cut you off or we're going to keep extending
but
you. I mean, think of Strom Thurmond.
Yeah.
Come on.
But Strom Thurmond is the name that just came to mind. You read my mind, Dr. K. But,
I mean, serving at 100 years old. Come on.
But I believe that, honestly, I believe that the Supreme Court, that it's a real issue that you can vote in somebody who's 40-something years old and he could be in there
forever.
Until, you know, they're in their 90s and, you know, an imbecile, a dithering, you know, insane person.
But this is an insane system. And that is why I argue, and I think many people would agree with me, the Supreme Court right now is the most powerful branch.
But we have a serious problem because look what's happened right now.
Yes.
It's supposed to be a system of checks and balances, and we no longer have that because we have the lower house, the upper house, the executive branch, and the judiciary all under lockdown on one party.
Look at that. It's painful when you think about it.
There is no more checks and balances. We are supremely under the control of one extremist party. There is no check and balance anymore.
No. This is what the reality of being in this country right now, and it's the reality also of being a part of a marginalized population, because when they start coming after things like Roe v. Wade, we know immigration is also on the table. We know Harvard's in the middle of an affirmative action suit. Like, it is going to be a number of issues.
Actually, when you think about it, they are fast becoming the minority of the country, but they are running every
like an apartheid country.
They're running every branch of the country.
Think about that, folks. Let me get some more calls. We have Valerie from downtown Baltimore. Valerie, how are you?
I'm good, thank you for taking my call.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry, but I've been very disturbed by the voting of white women since Doug Jones and Roy Moore, race.
Right.
Between those two. I was just amazed by the fact that they were willing, 57% of white women were willing to vote for a possible pedophile.
Yes.
Not just a sexual predator, but a pedophile.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just amazed. Like, where are your morals? Again, your integrity. I mean, when it comes to things like this, we have to think about our daughters, our nieces, our granddaughters. We have to think about all the other females. And then, do they not know that the laws that are going to be put into place are going to affect them as much as everyone else?
And their daughters and their granddaughters. That's
and
what
their
we're
granddaughters.
Talking about.
So where is your integrity? How come black women have to step up and say, I'm not going to vote for this sexual predator. I'm not voting for a pedophile. And you know, it's like, it seems as though our morals are more in place or in check than theirs are. And that's disturbing, because they should be thinking of this in terms of, just like as a black person, my rights to be violated, well, their rights are violated just like ours are. But somehow this identity politics takes precedence over everything else. And the other thing is that the Supreme Court is all about Donald Trump actually pardoning all of his family and friends.
Absolutely.
Because the law that's going to be passed is going to allow him to do that. Thank you for taking
my
call.
Thank you so much. Let me ask you this, Dr. Myers. I know we have a lot of calls. There's this conversation going on where Molly Ringwald has called on, I think she asked Beyonce, Ariana Grande, and so on and so forth, to take a knee. Like, the white women are thinking about taking a knee now, doing the national anthem, to protest both rape culture and the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh. But Bishop Talbert Swan, this is the bishop who just won, who was just selected as a MacArthur genius. He wrote on Twitter, white women kneeling during the anthem to protest rape culture is hijacking a movement you took no risk for. You didn't kneel in solidarity to the protest the murder of black people. Don't co-opt and make it about your victimization. That's white supremacy in the name of feminism. So what do you think?
I had not heard about this until just now.
Yeah, white women are talking about they need to start kneeling during the national anthem, but they're co-opting what we've been doing for years with Black Lives Matter.
I think they need to find their own way of protesting.
Yes.
I understand their rage. I understand their passion and their anger, and I commend them for it. But I think they need to find their own way of protesting. I think that what CAP and the rest of us have been doing for years, I think they need to not jump on that bandwagon.
No, because therein lies the problem that leads to division within the feminist movement. It's like, come on, come, like you said.
Had they been doing this for years in honor of, you know, Black Lives Matter and mass incarceration and police violence, that would have been different. But for them to now do it for a completely different movement, that's co-optation, and I don't appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm exactly standing with him. White supremacy in the name of feminism. We have John on the phone from Ellicott City. John, how are you?
Oh, thank you, Dr. K.
Yes, sir.
I agree. I don't think it makes any sense to be kneeling. The most effective way to deal with the Kavanaugh issue, register to vote, mobilize. And I just want to say that Mitch McConnell is unbeatable in Kentucky because cultural issues outweigh economic issues. I mean, this country is deeply divided. And what the Democrats are aiming at, really, is to try to get out the suburban white, you know, women's vote, because a lot of them are, they find Trump to be repulsive. Now, I am excited about the women candidates running throughout the country.
Yes, I mean, from Georgia on down.
I have more money to Emily's list this year than I have to any other Democratic organization. Mobilize and try to get the people out who are.
Yes.
Because, unfortunately, the Democratic coalition is a majority coalition, but it's not. They rarely vote in midterm elections.
And this is a very important one. Over 100 women
out,
run it.
The minority is out. Important.
We can win the House. Now, the Senate is a...
Oh, I'm going to stop you there, John. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Yeah, we have, because I want to get to a couple more calls. And you're right, Dr. Myers. It is a very important election.
Stacey
I just said...
Abrams, yes, Andrew Gillum.
Over in Georgia, yes.
Ayanna Pressley. There are so many critical races across
the
country.
Year.
This is a key election.
And there are 100 women or people who do not gender identify, who are running this year. I have to be clear. Somebody said it's just 100 women. It's not 100 women. Let's not gender them. 100 women and people who do not gender identify openly,
Alexandria
but are running. Yes.
So many important
Let's
races.
Put their names out there. Absolutely. We have Dee on the phone from Harford County. Dee, how are you?
Good evening, Dr. K. And you know I am not a feminist and I'm not a liberal woman. So you know my opinion is totally different.
I'm glad you called. Go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I want to congratulate Kavanaugh on his election to the Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, I have a son. I have a young grandson. And I would want all evidence to be proven that my son or my brother or my husband committed these crimes. 40 years. Where is the evidence that this man did this? This man has a stellar career, and not one time did any criminal allegations come up against this judge. So, therefore, I think that he had more than enough hearings. He was he testified before the world. She testified before the world. She did not file criminal charges. Nobody confirmed her testimony. So, you know what? If this is the way we're going, that you are guilty and you have to prove yourself to be innocent, this is a very dangerous slope. And I do have men in my family, and I don't ever want them to face an allegation that's 40 years old and they have no proof. Thank you for Dr. K.
Thank you so much, Dee. Now, that's just another perspective. Dee has called here before. I know where she stands on these issues. But what she's talking about, Dr. Myers, is the problem that we're having with rape culture. Is the problem that we're having with women not being believed. Is the problem that we're having where the onus is on the woman to prove that it did happen than being on the man to prove that it didn't. I'm not saying that that is a fair way. I'm saying for years, women have not been believed, Dr. Myers.
It's a he said, well, the problem is it's a he said, she said issue. And because the onus for decades, because the pendulum for decades has been not in the favor of the victim, they have been afraid to come forward. They've been afraid to press charges. They haven't said anything for years, for decades, if at all. They haven't shared with the authorities, with their parents, with their friends, because they were not likely to be believed.
And who would come forward now? Who would come forward and be on this altar and have your whole life laid out there for the world? Because, you know, the world's going to continue to judge Dr.
Right, because
Ford.
People have doubted them. People have called them whores. What were you wearing? How much did you have to drink? Why did you get in his car? Why did you go to his house? And so people haven't said. And look, even now when you have someone who, like Dr. Ford, with her credentials, her career, her marriage, her kids, it doesn't matter. No. She's still been dragged through the mud. And so why would someone come forward?
I think it's interesting that in a time when we're talking about rape culture, that Dr. Ford has received threats that she should be raped. I mean, I'm just thinking
exactly.
I mean, just think of how sick that sounds.
It's so disgusting. So why would someone want to come forward when you come forward and you're getting death threats, but also rape threats?
Yeah. All right. We have Diane on the phone. Diane, how are you? Thank you for calling.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Good. And hi to your guests. My purpose is for calling is we talk about Kavanaugh and how he got on the Supreme Court. But do we also understand how the Democrat, I think it was under the second Bush or even under Obama, when they changed the rules where it didn't have to be more than what it was, like 49 to 50?
It's 48-50 or 50-48.
Right. Yeah. They changed the rules, so they really messed themselves up when they did that. But the other thing, we was keeping our eyes on this, but did we know that our country was getting ready to go to war with China, not over the trade war, but over nuclear weapons? See, we have all this being piled up on top of us and not even looking at the bigger picture without, you know, the war. This man is about to go to war, this president, our country. And then to look at the thing, I'm not taking anything away from Dr. Ford because they didn't give her enough, they didn't give the FBI enough time. It should have been more than 1 week. It should have been like 3 or 4 weeks to investigate because you also had to make sure because as a woman myself, they've been through that. You have to have those people, women prep because they're not going to talk. That's why they didn't say anything. It's because they are afraid to even say something because it would come back on them. Like the professor said, they'd be called whores and everything else. So that 1 week, that was just a scapegoat for the Republican parties under the leadership of this.
Well, it was
this
a
president.
Sham of an investigation.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's all about white privilege, whether it's female or male. It was white privilege because our situation is even different. African-American women are even different. Are we heard?
Yeah,
and
I mean, think about it.
And the solid voice about, do they even listen to us? So that's even another topic, Dr.
All right. Thank you so much, Diane. I appreciate you. Well, one of the things, though, Dr. Myers, that Diane said, I just want to kind of take a quick moment to take a look at, is that she said, you know, while we're focusing on this issue, looking at this president taking us to war, doesn't that seem to be his strategy, though, Dr. Myers? I mean, you figure we've been under Trump's reign and rule now for, what, almost 2 years here? That's what he does. He gets us caught up in, Covfefe. He gets us caught up in what he's wearing. He gets us caught up in his comments. Meanwhile, he has put on more conservative judges and put through more judges than Obama did. I mean, he's doing all this while we're focusing on his tweets. He's making these kind
of
moves.
One of the things that I was so frustrated by is that Obama was legitimately entitled to put a justice on the Supreme Court, and the GOP deliberately and intentionally blocked him and said, we were not going to put through anyone he chooses, no matter what. Everyone's conveniently forgotten about Merrick Garland, and now Trump has put through two.
Yes. And he's moving on. And the idea is that who else is going to be pressured into resigning? Because I think there was a lot of other issues going on when that resignation hit. And all of a sudden, there's a seat open up, and Trump is ready to move. I mean, there's serious money moves, long game happening here. We have Ak on the phone from Baltimore. Ak, how are you?
Impressed, but blessed. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. You're on with myself and Dr. Myers.
We talk. When do we? We can shut this country down tonight by just protesting. Stop participating in the ball games and the Christmas. Close your mouth and your legs. No justice, no sex. Have a good one.
Okay. Now, my problem with those kind of comments, when you start talking about close your legs, because he actually said close your legs, I think people, some people, are confused about rape. I don't know why people think rape is about passion and love.
It's about power.
I mean, it's about power. So when you say close your legs, you are then making the assumption that a woman or a man who is raped has a choice about whether to open up their legs or not. See, that's why I don't like that. That kind of blame game.
Goodness.
I mean, that's just sick. I mean, it wouldn't be rape if you have a choice about whether to open your legs. So let's take that off the table. But I think, Dr. Myers, that's why we can't seem to get to a place where women and men, boys and girls, feel comfortable reporting.
Exactly. Especially when you think about how many children are the victims of sexual violence. Think about the power dynamics in those situations where they're being told, you know, you can't say anything, nobody will believe you, your family will hate you. You know, you have to think about those kinds of dynamics. I mean, I understand that Dr. Ford was a teenager, but I'm thinking about how many people I know in our communities who are children, younger.
Come on.
And when family members are involved, when relatives are involved, and the dynamics in those situations.
She was 15 years old. I can remember things that happened to me at the age of 15.
Yeah.
And I definitely would remember
the
feeling like my life was going to be torn.
The terror, like I won't be believed, my family will hate me.
Yes.
Nobody will believe. The terror that is involved in those situations.
It doesn't go away. It doesn't go away.
This news cycle has triggered so many people in so many absolutely fundamentally horrifying ways.
Yeah, well, I've been triggered for days. Like, it is just overwhelming.
Yes,
it's overwhelming. But you know what, Dr. Myers, as I wrap up here, one of the things about you and myself and those who stand with us, we will continue to fight even with our last breath.
Absolutely.
Like, in the end, they are not going to win. Thank you so much, Dr. Amrita Myers, as always, for joining me. Folks, we're going to leave it there for right now. I am just elated to be back with you. I look forward to talking with you tomorrow, having another conversation that matters. I appreciate you joining me and sharing your drive time with me. Today with Dr. K is a production of WEAA. The show is produced by Justina Pollard. We have assistance from Deja Edwards, our intern. Board operators today, Andre Melton and Tyler Mack was back. Stay tuned. Up next is For the Culture with Faraji. Remember, folks, here on Today with Dr. K, your voice matters, your opinion matters. We tell stories that matter. We're here for you. We are listening, because if it has your ear, you better believe it has our attention. Right here on WEAA 88.9 FM, absolutely the voice of the community. Make an appointment, meet me here tomorrow, and let's talk again.